of the conversation, and Abel, it is really all about her today. Frankie Dettori, 32nd arc. This is the horse, this really, of his career.
Network, a service of Capital District off-track betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. And it's racing across the globe as we will be heading to Longchamp in just a minute to pick up the 2020 ARC coverage again. You've been listening for the last few minutes to that as they head to the gate for race number 4 in France today, the Group 1 ARC, and it is notable, a mile and a half on the turf. It's notable because Enable will be going for her third victory, her unprecedented third victory. She is the number 8 horse. Frankie Dettori on board. If I remember last night, I think he's going for his 7th ARC overall, but an unprecedented third for Enable. She ran a close-up second last year, and they said, you know, we're going to keep her in training and try for that third ARC this season. She has a couple of wins and a second so far in 2020. She started the season with a close-up second in the Coral Eclipse, then won the King George and the September Stakes to get primed for this, again, unprecedented try for a third ARC. And it's a Philly and Mayer weekend, as yesterday Swiss Skydiver upset, minor upset, I guess. She was among the horses that were in the conversation, but won the Preakness in just a gutsy and really good performance over Authentic. And we will talk about that a little bit later on. We'll be joined by Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. Of course, the Racing Biz, great coverage of racing in the Mid-Atlantic region. And Frank was at Pimlico yesterday. If you watched the simulcast signal when the slate of selections came up amongst the folks covering the race down there in Pimlico, the Racing Biz selections were up before every race. And as I say, Frank was down there, so we'll get some firsthand coverage from yesterday's Preakness Day at Pimlico with Frank Vespi coming up again in just a few minutes. But before that, we're going to head into the gate for the ARC. Currently Enable, the 4-5 favorite. Again, she is the 8 horse, others taking some action. Persian King, the number 1 at 7-1. Stradivarius, the 6 from John Gosden, at also at 7-1. Out on the outside, Swoop, the number 12 is 8-1. So there are some of the horses that are getting a little bit of action. I mean, the next closest, the 7 horse, Satosh, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, the number 7 is currently the second choice at 6-1. So pretty good gap between the 4-5 Enable favorite and the second choice at 6-1. But the field is loading in for the ARC. We'll go there. Rooting for Enable, again, just always like to root for the fun stories in horse racing. And she's one of the best over the last few years, trying for her unprecedented third. Frankie Dettori on board, trying for his 7th. Let's send it to Longchamp and the 2020 ARC. We'll be back afterwards. Stay tuned.
But just before they do, your favorite in the race?
I'm on Enable.
In Swoop.
Swoop, I like In Swoop a lot. I'm going to go for Enable for the win, but I like In Swoop. And I also like Persian King. And over to you now, Ian.
Thanks, Catherine. Deirdre has just gone forward into the stalls. And now Enable is about to take her position up into stall number 5. Huge winnings this mare already. Over £10 million in sterling. And only a couple more to go forward. The easiest one to spot because of the yellow colours, or the grey colour of him. He's greyer than me now. Way to Paris He was a little reluctant to go around behind the stalls. He's got to go to three. Persian King, who's never gone this far before, has gone forward there. Pierre Charles Boudot, the blindfold, is on way to Paris, who has to take his position in the starting stalls. Stradivarius has gone forward up to the outside in 14. So 11 of them now. 2,400 meters. 99th running of the Qatar Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe. Way to Paris is in, so they're lined up and ready. And they're away. They get away. Way to Paris endured with the two slowest into their stride as they begin their 2,400-meter trip. And Persian King, the one who's up in trip, is keenest of all and is just in front early on. There's a wall behind him, though, with Chachnak just emerging through into a narrow second as Sotsas enables Stradivarius an in-swoop. Rabihar shot in behind those. She was a bit keen early on. Then Way to Paris and Gold Trip together. Two lengths behind those two. The white jacket of Royal Julius and the red cap of Deirdre at the back of the field. It's not a strong gallop. It is Persian King, Pierre Charles Boudot leading. Pink sleeve jacket Chachnak has moved through into second place. Then the yellow cap is Stradivarius with Olivier Pellet to the near side at this camera angle of Frankie Dettori on in Nable. White sleeves and pink cap. Over the far side of those is Sotsas, the two shades of green against the running rail as they move up to the highest point of the course. Then blue sleeves against the running rail is in swoop. A green jacket, a nose-banded horse, Gold Trip up on the outside of Rabihar in the blue and white colours. The yellow jacket of Way to Paris is next, and then comes Royal Julius, the checks on the sleeves, white and black, and the red and white colours of Deirdre as they begin to swing right-handed, and now they run downhill. They've got past halfway, and still Persian King leads. They've let him alone in front, and he leads by a length and a half. Chachnak in second, Sotsas in third as they cross the sprint course. Then Stradivarius travels strongly on the outside of Enable. They're together in fourth and fifth. In swoop is against the rails, just a half length behind those. Rabihar in blue, Gold Trip in green, and next behind these, Way to Paris. On the right is Royal Julius. Deirdre is next, but now they are down the full straight and heading towards the home turn. They're very, very well bunched, and it's still Persian King dictating this, although in second, Chachnak is now a lot closer to him. Sotsas is on the heels of the nose in of those. Then Enable and Stradivarius are poised in fourth and fifth positions as now they're into the home straight. Persian King is challenged by Chachnak. Enable is there. Stradivarius, Sotsas in behind those, still there as well in swoop. Here's Gold Trip on the outside, but they haven't got past Persian King yet. He's got just over a furlong to go. Now Gold Trip with the noseband and Sotsas between them. In swoop, it's close up. Enable try, but she's not going to get there. It is Sotsas in front. Christian de Mero now from Innsbruck in second place. It's getting closer all the time, but Sotsas has won it. Innsbruck was second. Persian King a mighty run in third. Then Gold Trip and Rabihar enable Stradivarius, Way to Paris, Deirdre and Royal Julius, and they trail back them to Chachnak, who was the last one home. Well, he's had disappointing runs so far this season, but when it counted, he's delivered. Seven, Sotsas has won the arc. In swoop in second. Persian King, a mighty run up, big in trip, finished in third. They're all French horses. Gold Trip in fourth position. Rabihar behind that. Then Enable and Stradivarius, Way to Paris and Deirdre and Royal Julius. So it's not a complete shock, but it might not have been the one a lot of people thought. But it's Sotsas has won the arc.
Jean-Claude Rouget said this was the one race that he had set the horse for all season. And number seven, Sotsas has landed the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe for 2020 with Christian de Muro on board. Has won over number 12 in swoop, Ronan Thomas, and third in the race going to number one, Persian King, attempting to lead throughout with Pierre-Charles Boudot. Fourth in was horse number 10, Gold Trip, a mighty run, and 15, Rabinar into fifth placing. It wasn't to be for Enable. Frankie Dettori gave the filly or the mare every possible chance from that position. It was a bunched field.
Yeah, a bunched field. We'll have plenty of time to look over it, but straight away we can join Fanny.
Yes, we're with Frédéric Pontier of team Jean-Claude Rouget. He's the one who travels with Sotsas, and he said he's never seen him so well since the...
Le cheval, je l'avais jamais vu aussi bien que l'année dernière à 3 ans. Au Jockey Club, c'était le même, un guerrier. Il était là, il était présent, et quand je le voyais marcher avant la course, j'ai dit à tout le monde, à tout mon staff, à toute l'écurie, là, il faut qu'ils aillent vraiment très vite aujourd'hui. Je l'ai dit avant la course et je ne me suis pas trompé. Et bravo à tout le monde, à M. Rouget, Jean-Bernard Roth, tout le monde, l'équipe de Pau. C'est une équipe, c'est un tout. Bravo, c'est un champion et il l'a montré.
A true champion, Frédéric was saying earlier that he was commenting that he's a true warrior and he found again the warrior that they had last year for the Prix du Jockey Club. As Jean-Claude Rouget had explained, he had a hard time finding him again. And an incredible training team. Part of them work out of Deauville, that's where Sotsas is being trained. Part of them also work in Pau, and Frédéric was complimenting the whole team as they're all part of the success. And he actually commented that maybe he will retire now. C'est vrai, c'est la fête maintenant? Non, pas encore.
Non, pas encore. Là. On va rentrer gentiment et on verra ça la semaine prochaine.
We'll come back for...
Enable goes down to defeat, and it could have been the course condition. They've been saying all week, been taking a lot of water, and it was going to be a yielding soft, however they determine it over there. But it was going to be on the bad side of that, so maybe that didn't play to her strength this afternoon. She was in perfect position, and things kind of spread out as they got into the straightaway, and she had a clear run. But then things kind of, you may be able to see it here. She's in the pink cap. Yeah, right there. Boy, things get oof. I mean, she's in the middle of the accordion there, getting squeezed. I don't know whether that made a difference or not. It certainly didn't help. But the winner, Sotash, who eventually, when we talked just as they were going in the gate, that was the second choice. But the late money made Sotash the fourth choice at 7-1. Enable was the favorite. Persian King wound up. Actually, Stradivarius wound up the second choice at 5-1. Persian King at 6-1 was the third choice. And then Sotash, as I say, late money kind of switched things around there. Went off as the fourth choice at 7-1. 7-12, 1-10, your official results there. Your unofficial result. Oh, there's an inquiry. Yeah, maybe the inquiry is taking a look. There was that squeeze play. I think the winner was pretty much clear of that, but they are showing an inquiry, and of course over there the rules are all different anyway, so it's hard to judge exactly what even might happen here. But hold your tickets. Again, it is still unofficial over there in Longchamps. 7-12, 1-10 with Enable going down to defeat this afternoon. And you heard the comments from the connections that got back to where he was last year. And if you look at the record, Sotash last year as a three-year-old, 3 wins and 5 starts, almost a couple of $1 million in the bank. Not as proficient this year with only 1 win and 4 starts so far before today. So now 2 wins and 5 starts in the arc. And you put that on the resume and it winds up to be a pretty good season, I guess, as a four-year-old getting it done. So congratulations to the connections there. We will continue to have French racing and the Prix de l'Opera. I may not be putting the right accent on that, but fillies and mares in a Group 1 coming up in the fifth race, probably about a half an hour away or so. In the meantime, we will talk some Preakness and some of the other stakes yesterday at Pimlico on their big day. We will do that with Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com, and we will do it right after we take a break. So stay tuned. Racing Across America continues right after this.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player? To have a better knowledge of the game? To be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays. past performances, and live streaming. Wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB. Become a better horse player.
Birdstone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning, the day after the completion of the Triple Crown in 2020. Who would have thought we would have been saying that on October 4th? But everything a little different in year 2020. As always, when we talk Mid-Atlantic racing and the Maryland circuit in particular, we like to reach out to our friend Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. The Racing Biz does a great job covering racing down there. And Frank was at Pimlico yesterday, so I thought who better to talk Preakness Day. Frank, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Thanks for having me on. It's always good to talk with you at the end of this crazy Triple Crown season this year.
It is kind of nuts. We missed you up at Saratoga. I know we've had you on in the past up there when you visited town, and we missed a lot of people up at Saratoga. And I pulled up from your Twitter feed. I guess it was similar. I read Marty McGee said there was about 1,000 people on track, so I was surprised at that number because I don't know whether we ever hit that at Saratoga, but I pulled up the shot of the empty grandstand. Just give us the feel yesterday, the Preakness 2020 with the very, very limited number of folks on track.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a very weird feeling. It was a very unusual day, and, the day started for me, it was kind of like, here are all the worst things going on in the world. Like, you've got, you know, heavy security, even though nobody's allowed in the track, and bomb sniffing dogs, and you got to get your temperature taken, and COVID-19 tests, and nobody in the building. And so I walked around and there's nobody there. It was just all very strange and sort of depressing, to be honest. But then the racing started. And then in particular, the DeFrancis Dash came, and then the Preakness. And these were unbelievably good races, and just really easy to like outcomes. And it kind of made it all go away. And at the end of the day, I sort of felt a little bit like, you know, like when I was first getting into racing and you'd watch this day of big races and all you wanted to do is sort of watch the replays and read all the articles. So that's how I felt at the end of yesterday. It was like the racing was so good, it kind of overcame all the other ancillary stuff around it.
That's funny because that relates to Saratoga. It was very different. It was, can't wait for the fans to come back, but there was great racing up there this year in all the various divisions. And that kind of, you're right, played out in a little bit of a microcosm yesterday down at Pimlico. And one of our big races up at Saratoga that we were excited about, Tisdalaw and the Traverse, and on the three-year-old side yesterday, let's jump right in, the Preakness. Let's pull up the stretch run to the Preakness and get your thoughts. Swiss Skydiver will be the number 4 horse, Authentic the number 9 horse. He has every chance to go by in the stretch, and she just won't let him. We had Ken McPeak on yesterday, and he was disappointed with the outcome of the Kentucky Oaks, saying he wanted to get inside Gamine there, and the jockey didn't follow those instructions. Well, Robbie Alvarado makes kind of a clever move on the turn, and I don't know whether it was 2 instructions yesterday or not, but he winds up on the inside, and we're watching him come down the stretch here. And all the way, you think, well, Authentic's going to go by, but then she just will not let him go by. Chart margin and neck. And they are a chart margin of about 10 lengths in front of Jesus's team in third. Art Collector, 4th. I took a little shot with Pneumatic in here. That one a disappointing 10th in the field of 11. But no disappointment for Kenny McPeak and Swiss Skydiver. This was, as you say, a fun result to the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Tremendous horse race. You know, 2 really good horses slugging it out down the lane. It's funny because I talked with McPeak for some time yesterday morning as well. And you know, one of the things he said to me was, he said, I really want our filly to go the half mile in about 48 seconds. And I said to him, well, you're going to be several lengths behind. Authentic's going to probably go 46 and change. He said, we can't worry about other horses and other people. We need to just do what our horse needs to do, because that's going to give her the most punch in the lane. Alvarado delivered the exact half mile that he said he wanted. And then, you know, managed to slice through in between horses to get past Authentic just a little bit, you know, along the inside. And who would have guessed that with 3/8 of a mile ago, the final winning margin had already been established? But it had. That was it. He got a neck ahead, and that was it all the way down the lane. Tremendous horse race. Really good ride by Alvarado. And, you know, you just had to enjoy it. If you like horse racing, this was a great race. And by the way, give a little credit to Authentic. I mean, he just ran the 3rd fastest Preakness in history. It just happened to not be quite good enough yesterday.
Yeah, that's worth mentioning, too. The time was kind of eye-popping, given that she did it in that type of situation. And part of that may be also, it's later in the year, these horses are a little more mature. That might have played into it as well. Talk a little bit about, you do the radio show, and I know a few weeks ago you had Andy Beyer on, and I think he was kind of thinking, you know, maybe this is a chance for us to rethink the Triple Crown schedule, and I wonder if they will.
I would like them to, but I obviously don't get a vote. I mean, what Andy said basically was, this seems to have worked really well, doing maybe starting a little later and having a little more spacing in between the races means the horses, you know, they're a little more mature. It's maybe a little more formful racing. And, you know, and the horses can do this. If you want to run in all of them, you can do it, which I think a lot of people are daunted by the 2 weeks, 3 week schedule of the traditional Triple Crown. And even though I think you had one horse that made all 3 races, you know, you had a situation here where nobody could reasonably say like, oh, I ran in the Derby and my horse is too tired. You know, they were able to come back and run here an authentic, ran a good race. He just didn't win. And so I think there's a lot to it. I also think something to it is the other races on the card. You know, for Pimlico, it gets drowned a little bit by the Churchill card and then the Belmont card 5 weeks after the Churchill card with Pimlico stuck in the middle. I was actually counting one of the earlier races. I think it was the Black Eyed Susan. And there were several horses in that race that had the Black Eyed Susan been 2 weeks after the Oaks, wouldn't have come, you know, and not just a couple of Oaks horses, but horses that ran on Oaks Day or the day after, you know, that wouldn't have come. So I think, I honestly think it makes for better cards if you've got a little more time. In the modern era, this is how people train horses, to run every 4, 5, 6 weeks. They don't train them to run in every 2 weeks. And you know, it would be nice for horse racing to live in the modern era. We don't, but it would be nice if we tried it.
Yeah, I you know, I don't want it necessarily stretched out to October, but I agree. I think the first Saturday in May, maybe the first Saturday in June, and then go to July 4th, something like that, I think has the opportunity to put that together, those nice cards. And yeah, because it's just, you know, anti the training methods of 2020 to have that condensed schedule, which I think typically hurts the Preakness a little bit, can hurt the Belmont a little bit as well. And we saw it yesterday with a nice field in the Preakness, and as you say, a nice undercard, all stakes undercard, which was just fabulous yesterday at Pimlico. Just before we move on from the Preakness, we kind of alluded to it a little bit, but the post-race articles that were written, Robbie Alvarado seemed, understandably, very ecstatic. And when I had Ken McPeak on yesterday, he noted the jockey situation. They thought they had a commitment from the jockey, and it went the other way. And so he reached out to Robbie and said, you know, he's a guy who just doesn't have any outfits really tied into him right now, but he's still got plenty of talent and experience, and played out that way. It was good to see him take that shot, go to Robbie Alvarado, and have it pay off for both of them.
Yeah, you know, I got to admit, I saw Robbie Alvarado. I was like, oh, yeah, Robbie Alvarado. He rides in all the big races. And then I started looking at his record. In the last 3 years, he's winning at like 7%. And, you know, I think last year was his worst year in almost 30 years. I mean, he really has been in mothballs the last couple of years. And you got to give McPeak credit for giving him a chance. And I'll tell you what, the guy delivered the goods yesterday. That was a winning race. That was a really good, it was a really good horse race, but it was a really good ride by an experienced rider who realized, sort of approaching the turn, it's like, I'm going to have to make a decision right now. And he made it. He made it aggressively. He made it without fear. And that was the winning move.
Yeah, it was very, again, a satisfying result there, a different winner in each leg of the Triple Crown, and it'll be interesting to see how that three-year-old picture plays out now. And Tis the Law had a nice workout yesterday, so it's shaping up nicely as we move forward as well. All right, let's go a little earlier on the card, a little bit different this year. Typically, the Black Eyed Susan would be the day before, but again, they loaded up the card yesterday with plenty of stakes action, and the Black Eyed Susan played out nicely in that. Well, nicely for me, because I actually played a little double with Miss Marissa and used some Swiss Skydiver for a buck. It was $150, so I was pretty happy with that result. But I only did it because I had some pick fours going that included Bonnie South and a couple others. But as I was sitting in here doing the handicapping show and looking at Miss Marissa in that last race, I said, you know what, I better back up with her. And I'm happy I did, because as we watch the stretch run here, it will be number nine, Miss Marissa, who in the last race led all the way around, but this one kind of set just off the pace and then took the lead coming late and held off Bonnie South down the lane. Number nine, Miss Marissa. Number five, Bonnie South. Number eight, Hopeful Growth, runs third. But Miss Marissa at $22.20 gets it done in the Black Eyed Susan.
Yeah, it was a good. It was certainly a good race, a good outcome. Danny Santino up for Jimmy Ryerson, and you know, this horse is a little interesting. Ryerson said afterwards that he had thought she wanted two turns last year, and he tried it, and it didn't work. And as he put it, she made a liar out of me. But this year, she's obviously come back. She's won three straight, and you know, here obviously going 9 furlongs. Was on the engine in a fast pace. I mean, they went a lot faster than the Preakness in the early going here. and still came home pretty well, enough to hold off Bonnie South. One of the things that occurred to me at the end of this race is on Thursday, Johnny Velasquez had said, you know, I've been watching the races on the dirt. You really need to be on or near the pace if you're going to have a chance. And Bonnie South was way back and had a lot to do and almost did it, but not quite good enough to get there against the winner here, Miss Marissa. So a good effort, and I think an astute ride by Santino. He put the horse in the mix right away and then took over and then had enough to hold on.
Yeah, Bonnie South far back late, just had too much to do in the stretch, but doesn't wind up only a neck short there. Miss Marissa gets it done. I pulled up buyer figures. Miss Marissa, 92. Swiss Skydiver, 105. So a nice number in the Preakness. Let's go race earlier. The James Murphy on the card. Mile on the Grass. In this one, it's going to be Don Juan Kitten. I like Don Juan Kitten in here over Bye Bye Melvin. I thought they might switch it up from the result in the Saranac. And I always say, sometimes we get clever. We try to switch up results from a race, and they come out just the way they were in the race before. And I'll tell you what, when they came under the wire, I thought I was going to have the same regret. I thought Bye Bye Melvin caught him. It's going to be number 10, Don Juan Kitten, number 13, Bye Bye Melvin. And Bye Bye Melvin makes a big push right at the end. And as I say, watching live, I thought, oh, I got nipped in here. But Don Juan Kitten holds on in a really gutsy effort under Gabriel Saez. John Velasquez was on board Bye Bye Melvin. But again, this was a ding-dong finish.
It really was. I'm guessing you were cursing Gabriel Saez when you thought he had lost there because he opened up that long lead after three quarters of a mile. And you're like, oh, he's home free. And then he almost gets run down on the money. But this horse does nothing but run good races. I mean, he's a nice horse here. And certainly that was a good effort there. And, you know, gee, we never see Ken and Sarah Ramsey win important races, do we? So, obviously a big effort there and a good outcome. And a good outcome for you. Congratulations there.
Yeah, as I say, coming under the wire, I thought, oh, I didn't. I was shocked. Usually you see them, then you see the replays, and you can kind of parse it out. But I was convinced in that one. I thought Bye Bye Melvin got him again the way he did up at Saratoga and the Saranac. So when they posted the results, kind of eyes popped out of my head a little bit. But, yeah, it worked out all right. A little bit earlier, the Laurel Futurity. Again, these days it's on the grass, so it's a little bit different than going back in the day, but still a fun race. I love the three-year-olds on the turf, but because I love the three-year-olds on the turf this time of year, I also love the two-year-olds on the turf, and these two-year-old stakes races on the turf are always fun. Yesterday in the Laurel Futurity, it is number 7, Catman, getting it done. I had that one in my mix, so I was, again, happy with this result because at this point I was alive in the first leg of a pick 4, eventually got knocked out a little bit later on. But Wooten Asset was the one that scared me that I didn't use. It was the European for Graham Motion. I just wasn't convinced on that one. But Wooten Asset, the number 3, makes this a race. Again, another ding-dong finish. Catman will hold on under Dan Santino. The favorite was Hidden Enemy. That one winds up 5th in the field of 6. But again, another fun ding-dong finish on the day.
Yeah, that's a nice get for you to pick up Catman. This horse was still a maiden coming into this race. So, certainly had some things to prove here. I don't know quite what to do with these, particularly these two-year-old races yesterday that we had Yielding Ground. You know, when they stretched out the Futurity and the Salima last year, to two turns, which for the first time in quite a while, and the Salima delivered Sharing. Sharing won the Salima, went on to win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies or Fillies Turf, and it's clearly a top level runner. So we kind of have high hopes that these races are really going to get into a good rhythm of being important races. I don't know what to do with the results over the Yielding Ground. The course certainly, they were off the turf Thursday, the races were very slow and some of their early paces in these races were very slow. So again, just not quite sure what to do with this, not taking anything away from Catman, who gets the money at 10-1 too. So a nice get there, but it'll be curious. I'm very curious to see what happens.
Yeah, I should note, I had him down in the 3rd spot, but I used him on my pick ticket. I did use the beaten favorite on top, and as I say, that one disappointed a little bit in there. The Francis Memorial on the card as well. Grade 3 event, 6 furlongs the trip and in the DeFrancis Memorial. In this race, I thought Landeskog was going to be the one to beat. Boy, that talk about disappointing. Yeah, the betting public also liked Landeskog 4-5, winds up sixth in the field of six. But yet another ding-dong finish. This one, three horses right there on the line. Lakai, a horse I had kind of in the mix, gets it done at 7-1. Eastern Bay at 5-1 runs second, and Nitrous runs third at 6-1. But as I say, as they come down the stretch here, it'll be bing, bing, bing. A chart margin nose-nose between first and second and third. So, again, another really fun result, fun finish in the DeFrancis Memorial.
Yeah, absolutely fabulous horse race. And you know, for Maryland folks like me, this is a super satisfying conclusion to this race. Lakai's a Maryland bred. He's by Cuba. Cuba has hardly any offspring. He's trained at Laurel by Damon Dilla DeVico. Damon is a nice guy. His kids work at the track. His wife works with him in the barn. He not only is a trainer, he also works for International Sound, which does the audio video for Laurel and Pimlico. So he's always around. And this horse, all this horse does is run good races. He shows up every race. Sometimes it's good enough, sometimes it's not, but he always runs hard. He always runs a good race. And yesterday, just barely good enough. First graded stakes win for Damon. Caramanos aboard. The last, Damon has won this race twice. This is kind of a cool little sidebar. The last time was when the race was ungraded. I think it was back in 2013 with a horse named Immortalize. It was a very cool story. It was owned by a guy named Bobby Abbo, who at the time was battling leukemia, which would eventually kill him. But Bobby was a neat guy. He was kind of a Washington, D.C. Semi-legend. And that was a very, very emotional scene when they won that race. And so for him to come back now that it's great and win it again, it's just a very cool moment. And a lot of people at the track, you know, a lot of people who know Damon and know his story were really, really happy for him. Just a really satisfying outcome. This race, as I said earlier, this race and the Preakness were, to me, the kind of races that just make you say, okay, this is what we like about this game.
Yeah, and having you on in the past and Dave Rodman, you've talked about Dilla DeVico before and, you know, working around the track as well. And, boy, yeah, it does have a nice horse here. 10 wins and 28 career starts now, well over $500,000. In the bank, so congratulations to that team. The dinner party a little earlier on the card, on the grass, grade two event in the dinner party, and we will look at the stretch run here. Factor This was logical as the 4-5 choice, and Factor This gets it done pretty easily under Florent Giroux, Brad Cox trainee that was coming in off a second place finish in a grade one down at Churchill last time behind Digital Age. Takes this field pretty much all the way around on the front end. Some Like It Hot Brown runs second. Hembree runs third. I was hoping there would be a little more pace up front between Factor This and Some Like It Hot Brown, and I took a little pop with Hembree to make up ground. He does, but as we watch here under the finish line, he does it to be a well-beaten third, as there was really no duel up front. Factor This was pretty comfortably in the lead all the way around in the dinner party.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. Mike Maker, who trained Some Like It Hot Brown, was sort of lamenting after the race and kind of saying, I thought we were going to be the one on the lead here. That was what I was aiming for. And once Factor This went to the lead and got to set moderate fractions, it was pretty much all over. I mean, this horse has been in very good form and terrific effort last time out in the Grade One Turf Classic. Had won three or four in a row prior to that, has just been running really, really well. And so Giroux put him on the lead, and he basically said if somebody else went, they could go, but nobody went. So I took the lead, and that was kind of the end of the story. This is a good horse, and you kind of think some other big things are in his future.
Yeah, millionaire for Brad Cox, and another nice performance from that one. The Miss Preakness, a grade three event. This is for the three-year-old fillies going six furlongs. And I said I had some clever ones on tickets yesterday. This is one. This was a whiff for me. And it was one of those where you look back afterwards and you say, you know what? I at least should have had this horse in the mix, because Wicked Whisper is a horse that had shown a little promise early in the career maybe hadn't quite lived up to it this year, but had that promise to step forward and did it yesterday in the Miss Preakness. Wicked Whisper is going to be the number two horse. Joe Bravo, Steve Asmussen. Ain't No Elmers, the number one, runs second. Sound Machine runs third. Monday Call, the 1-2 favorite, disappointing, running fourth in here. But Wicked Whisper, as I said, gets back to the form she had kind of hinted at last year as a two-year-old in the third start of her three-year-old season yesterday in the Miss Preakness.
Yeah, you know, I mean, she's a grade one winner as a two-year-old. She won the Frisette last year, got a big speed figure, looked like a major player, then did not run well going two turns in the Breeders' Cup, and has come back just sort of okay so far this year. As Steve Asmussen, who trains her, basically said, you know, as much as any horse, you know, she's really been affected by the screwy schedule and the situation this year with COVID-19, and just now is maybe rounding back into form. And Joe Bravo rode her in this race, and he said that, you know, they basically said their only instruction was try to get out of the gate. She's had some issues getting out of the gate, so see what you can do. And they did that. And, you know, she tucked in behind the speed, you know, down, covered up down on the rail. And Bravo said that couldn't draw it up any better than this was. And she, you know, kind of got clear, kicked out in the lane and drove home. I'll be interested to see going forward if she is now ready to move back into the upper echelons. This is the race, by the way, that where Covfefe really announced herself last year when she ran 107.70 and winning it by a pole and setting the Pimlico track record. So I don't know that this is Covfefe, but it'll be interesting to see if she can get back to some of these better races.
Yeah, and that Frisette last year, she ran an 87 buyer. This year, she hadn't come close to that. She had hit a 66 in the Beaumont, and then in the Charlestown Oaks, ran a 76, but yesterday an 85. So maybe she is moving in the right direction and getting back to what we saw last year. But as I say, given that promise last year, I kind of kicked myself that I didn't at least have her in the mix somewhere. I kicked myself again in the Hilltop. But I had this one labeled on the page as a handicap, very competitive. So I wasn't surprised that I whiffed in here a little bit. I didn't use Evil Lynn, the eventual winner, who didn't go off, you know, went off 7-2, $9 and change. So the betting public was looking at that one a little bit. It's Mike Maker. It's a horse that was firing some races that certainly fit with this bunch. I just didn't get pulled in that direction. I wound it up, I liked the 9 horse that got scratched at 10-1. I was going to take a little pop with Princess Grace, so I scratched into Vigilante's Way. That one's going to wind up second as a lukewarm 5-2 choice, but it'll be number 5, Evil Lynn, number 7, Vigilante's Way, and Caravelle, who I thought was going to be interesting at a price as well. That one comes third. I didn't get the price, though. Caravelle was 12-1 on the morning line, but the betting public wants to listen to me on the morning handicapping show because it bumps down to 3-1, but does complete the trifecta. But nice win for Evil Lynn. Caramanos, again, local guy there in the Mid-Atlantic, and Mike Maker teaming up.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's been kind of neat about, you know, not neat about COVID, but about the way these races have played out, these sort of situations have played out here and in Charlestown, some other places, is some of these local guys are getting a chance to ride some of these nice out-of-town horses and showing that they can ride good races. And Caramanos won 2 stakes on the day. He won this one with Evil Lynn. And, you know, clearly I think she benefited from stretching back out to 2 turns. And I think that helped her. And I, you know, maybe a little bit easier group than she saw last time when she was 40-1 at Kentucky Downs going 6.5 furlongs. That probably didn't hurt either.
Yeah, and that's a great point you make, because that is one of the fun stories of an awkward situation over the last few months with the bubbles these jockeys have been put in. A lot of these local guys are winding up on some horses that they otherwise wouldn't have a shot with, and so that's fun to see as well. All right, the third race at Pimlico yesterday, again, on an all-stakes card, which included, I handicapped even the end of the day, I handicapped the Arabians. I don't know if I knocked it out of the park there, but I gave it my shot in the President's Cup. But earlier in the day, the Skipat, $100,000 up for grabs for the ladies going 6. I like Liza Star in here. Disappoints at 5-2, running 5th in the field of 6. But the winner, Never Enough Time. Horse I had underneath in the mix a little bit. That one's going to get it done. Number 3 horse taking them all the way around at 5-2. The 2-1 favorite, Bronx Beauty, winds up 2nd. And Bye Bye Jay winds up 3rd in here. But always fun to see Mike Trombetta in the winner's circle as well.
Yeah, Trombetta and this owner, Larry Johnson, they teamed up on Thursday to win one of the stakes, one of the turf sprints. And this was a good effort, I thought, from Never Enough Time. Her second stakes win in a row. She was very stubborn on the lead, I thought. There were a couple moments where you thought, okay, now they're going to come get her. And she just wouldn't let anyone by and kick clear again in the lane and then had enough to hold on late. So they're obviously going to have some fun with this filly. And I don't know what her ceiling is, but certainly there's plenty of $100,000 six furlong stakes for fillies out there. So they're going to have plenty of fun with her, even if she doesn't go further than this.
Yeah, still a relatively lightly raced 4-year-old. This was career start number 9, career win number 5. So it's a horse with some talent, and we'll see where they go from here. But as you say, I think maybe not the upper echelon, but there'll be plenty of the B and C level stakes races that they have an opportunity to chase that will put some money in the bank with a horse like that. So we'll watch that one going forward. The Galarette, again, a little bit earlier on the card, grade 3 event, mile and a 16th on the grass. And this one was the, favorite of the betting public and gets it done. Julie Foxtrot at even money, $4.20 the payoff there for Brad Cox and Judd Mott. Came in and just looked to have a little bit of a class edge on this bunch, and that's the way it played out here. Varenka looked like maybe one of the alternatives if you were going in that direction. No Mo Lady runs third. She's on the warpath. 7-5 as the second choice, a little bit disappointing running fourth in here, but no disappointment from the public choice, Juliet Foxtrot, getting it done in the Galarette.
Yeah, I thought it was a good ride by Giroux here. I mean, he's sitting on the best horse. Habu de Cava, who is 50-1, goes right to the lead. And he kind of glides out into the two path and just sits off that one a little bit. He knows he can go when he needs to go, and he can consume that horse whenever he wants to. And that's basically what he did. I think, that and sort of class relief told the tale here. This horse had been keeping really good company. Hadn't won a race since last July when she won the Modesty at Arlington, but had been keeping the right kind of company, grade 1, grade 2. Had been second, had been third, beat a length, beat half a length. So it was kind of always right there against these better horses. Gets a little bit easier group and handles them today, which is what you look for from this kind of horse.
Very good. And Frank, this is going to time out nicely because they're circling around behind the gate for the Prix de l'Opera. And so we have just a chance to talk quickly about the Salima, which started out the card. I said earlier, I like the 2-year-old boys on the turf. The 2-year-old girls are also fun, too, because it portends the future, potentially. And Fluffy Socks, the other Chad Brown, gets it done. I took a shot with Domain Expertise, the Klarovich Chad runner. That one disappoints running 7th, but Chad gets the money with Fluffy Socks in here. Third career start, had broken the maiden over at Kentucky Downs and got it done in the Salima yesterday.
Yeah, Trevor McCarthy, another local kid up on this one, slips through along the rail and goes on to win. Certainly a pretty good effort. We joke about it here in Maryland with like Claudio Gonzalez. He's not Chad Brown, obviously, but he's sort of our local analog to that. Sometimes you just got to bet the higher price Chad.
And
that was certainly the case here. So good effort. It'll be fun to see if any of these turn into serious runners down the road.
I think that was a possibility given the connections. All right, they're loading the gate. So, Frank, we got to wrap it up, but really appreciated the conversation. A little recap of Preakness Day at Pimlico yesterday. Folks can certainly swing by theracingbiz.com and catch some of the post Preakness Day commentary as well, and much, much more as far as racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Frank, again, appreciate the visit. We'll talk again.
My pleasure, Seth. Thanks for having me. Good luck today.
Appreciate it. Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. All right, let's send it to Longchamps and the Prix de l'Opera. These are fillies and mares going 1.25 miles on the turf, another grade 1 event. And I just can't get my... Oh, okay. I was doing the favorite in here is currently the number 13, Alpine Star, at 2-1, 5-2, the number 8, Taukeel, and 3-1, Ternawa, the number 2 horse. So 2, 8, and 13 are the horses that are taking some money as they go into the gate at Longchamp. We will see how it plays out in just a couple. Having a little trouble loading one of the horses. Looked like was wearing a little bit of a blanket as well, but most of them are loaded in. So we'll send it to Longchamp. I would think they'll get this horse in. And maybe this is one you want to look at, because doesn't want to go get in, that means they want to get out. So expect this one to blast out of the starting gate and maybe be heard from early. But we'll see again how it plays out in a couple. Longchamp and the Prix de l'Opera coming up.
Set to go, mile and a quarter, 2,000 metres for this Prix de l'Opera. Zarianka, who dropped her rider in the parade ring, is the last of them to get going as they start away. And the yellow sleeves of Ordaya with Alpine Star striped sleeves going past her. Under restraint, though, not sure Shane Fairley wants to be in lead early on. Torquil and Christian de Murders on the outside, all rumours. Two shades of blue behind those. Durance is next to Grey Jacket. The grey and white stripes of Ambition follows. And then Interroyal Lady, dark blue and yellow jacket. Tickle Me Green, white and green colours. The orange is Spirit of Nelson. She's just preceded by Tarnara in green colours. To the right with a noseband, Zayanka towards the rear of the field. She has only Grand Glory in light blue and yellow colours behind her. Doesn't appear to be particularly strong pace. They're just moving at the highest part of the course past the 7 furlong start. And it is local market leader Torquil who shows in front. Alpine Star still under a little bit of restraint there in second place. And then comes Ordaya, the yellow sleeves, about a half length back in third. All rumours, one length off those in fourth place. Durance is next from the stripe colours of Ambition. There'll be a length and a half to the green cap of Tickle Me Green, who is half length ahead, I suppose, of Interroyal. Tarnawa is next. She's now got three behind her, those being Spirit of Nelson, Zarianka and Grand Glory as they move down the full straight on the way towards home. Not gone particularly fast by the looks of things. Torquil has the advantage, stretching out in front, but only by a half length to Alpine Star, who's a lot closer in second. All rumours, given the hurry up round the outside, Ordaya behind these. Now Tarnara in green towards the right, about two from the right, making good progress. Ambition and Tickle Me Green behind those. Then Spirit of Nelson. Alpine Star has come to join Torquil and just get past her. Ambition has moved through over the far side. Ordaya, yellow cap still running on. Tarnara towards the outside in the green is really beginning to close now as they race towards towards the finishing straight, and it's Tarnawa coming to join Alpine Star. Ordaya still there on the far side, and Tarnawa, I think, has just grabbed it on the line to Alpine Star. Ordaya behind those, and Torquil Ambition behind those was Interroyal Lady, took on me green, followed in by Grand Glory, Spirit of Nelson. That was followed by All Rumours. Zarianka came next, and I think the last one home was Durance. Close finish in the end, but Tarnawa, she's improved massive amounts in the last 12 months or so, and this has been another group one for her. She dropped down in trip, but she won. Another great run from Alpine Star, has been so consistent this season. Big run, Ordaya in third place. Torquil faded a little bit late on to be fourth. Then Ambition, they're clear from Tickle Me Green and Grand Glory.
7, 8 and 5 after the running of race number 5, the Prix de l'Opera. Coming with a well-timed run, patiently ridden by Christophe Simeon. Tarnawa knew where the winning post was, handled the conditions to perfection and got home narrowly. Tarnawa, Christophe Simeon, the winner over number 13, Alpine Star, who gave her all. She was prominent throughout, ridden by Shane Foley. A great run to just be caught on the line. Was very heavily supported here in France in the dying minutes of that race, just from a betting perspective. And number 7, Ordaya, proved that her win in the Group 1 at Deauville last time out was no fluke and was a close-up third, ridden by Yoritz Mindizabel. Fourth in was horse 8, Torquil, and fifth into number 5, Ambition. Looked a great race on paper, Catherine, and that's the way it turned out.
Yeah, it certainly turned out to be a great race, and Tarnawa justifying the decision of her connections. They could have legitimately supplemented her into the arc following her win in the trial, the Prix Vermeil, which is a very successful trial for the arc. They decided, Mark Wells said to me after that race that they felt that 10 furlongs was her best distance. There was a few concerns about the ground, but it didn't.
2.13, 7 and 8, 7 to 2 over 8 to 5 over 15 to 1 for your try there, as Tarnawa does get it done late over Alpine Star in the Prix de l'Opera there at Longchamp. We will continue. They have, what do they have on the card today? 8, 9 races. So that was race 5. Still plenty of action from Longchamp on what is always a big day over there with plenty of group stakes action. So yeah, that remainder coming up as well. All right, we went over the Preakness Day stakes down at Pimlico, but I don't want to let the day go without hitting. I don't have the replays, but I'll at least hit on some of the results yesterday at Belmont and Keeneland, and also give you a little update because I had pulled up buyer numbers as well. Let me grab those. As I said earlier, Swiss Skydiver, a solid 105 in the Preakness. Miss Marissa in the Black Eyed Susan, 92. Factor this in the dinner party, 110. That's pretty solid. Julie Foxtrot with a 90. Lakai with a 95. Yaupon, who won the Chick Lang, what was it, Thursday or Friday? 99. Again, the Steve Asmussen assembly line of sprinters. Catman and the Laurel Futurity is 71. Fluffy Sox is 69. Just looking to see if there are any other notables in there. Not really. But moving on to Belmont on Saturday afternoon, the Gallant Bloom, Frank's Roquette, stepped in against Older for the first time and had no trouble there. Frank's Roquette, a chart margin of over 7 lengths as the 35-cent to a dollar favorite. We're watching that one here, and this is just the you know, a stellar performance. Let me see. I think I have her buyer as well. 95, a solid 95 for Frank's Roquette, getting it done over on her way. Royal Charlotte running third. You know, this wasn't necessarily a powerhouse A-plus field of Older fillies and mares she was beating, but it was a salty group, and that she does it like this, pulling away just under 8 lengths. Pretty impressive for Frank's Roquette. Nice little 3-year-old filly sprinter from Bill Mott. Junior Alvarado was on board yesterday, again, in a very, very nice performance in the Gallant Bloom. In the Pilgrim, again, 2-year-olds on turf, always a lot of fun. Fire at Will, I did not like this one, but it is Mike Maker, and so I guess really this season you have to look at everything he sends out. But the betting public let this one get away. The Rank Outsider at 13-1. Fire at Will gets it done. Public Sector, the 4-5 choice, runs second to Chad Brown Clarovich runner, but just got started too late. By then, Fire at Will had the jump, and Fire at Will chart margin of a couple lengths there. Again, $29 for a Mike Maker runner on the turf. And as they say, this season, it just seems like you can't let his horses get away like that. And again, I did not pull the trigger on Fire at Will, but a race later, I did like Channel Maker. I wasn't quite sure. You know, after his win in the Sword Dancer up in Saratoga, I was outside the winner's circle for the post-race commentary as they were doing that outside the winner's circle this year. And Bill Mott commented, funny horse to ride, hard horse to ride, but got it done up there. Would he get the same kind of a situation? I was hoping. I put Channel Maker on top, and it did play out very similarly to the Sword Dancer. Channel Maker gets on the lead under Manny Franco and leads all the way around as the second choice at 5-2. Licario runs second, and Saddler's Joy runs third in here. The favorite was Rock Emperor. That one wound up fifth in the field of seven. But a nice front-end score under Manny Franco for Channel Maker, following up the nice win up at Saratoga and the Sword Dancer. So again, front-end winner for Bill Mott and company down at Belmont as well in the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic. Kelso yesterday, Channel Maker, 108. Very nice. Fire at Will had an 80. As I said, Frank's Roquette with a 95, but Channel Maker, a 108. That was impressive. Complexity in the Kelso, I put Code of Honor over Complexity, but I said, you know, Complexity may get it done here. Code of Honor just got started a little too late. Complexity here in the Klarovich red and white just gets a little bit of a jump on Code of Honor, and it was just enough to get the advantage. And Code of Honor kind of looks like, I'm going to make a push here. But again, with Complexity getting the jump, just had the edge on that one, and they kind of held the margin all the way down the stretch. So at 4-5, betting public was on Complexity. That one gets it done, and he puts up a very solid buyer figure. Complexity winds up running a 110 buyer yesterday in the Kelso in the field of four. In the Belmont Derby, Gufo gets it done. I did like Gufo in here, as did the betting public, at 7-5. Gufo's going to be the number two horse, making the nice late run here. Just came up short making the late run up at Saratoga, but gets enough room and gets started soon enough under Junior Alvarado to get it done. Chart margin of length, again, at 7-5. No word second. Mo Ready third in there, but a nice run for Christophe Clement and, as I say, Junior Alvarado in the Belmont Derby yesterday for Gufo. That one winds up 94 buyer. Nice number for Gufo yesterday in that three-year-old turf stakes race. All right, let me just hit on the Keeneland races yesterday as well. In the Woodford, Leinster got it done as the 5-2 choice. Seemed like the one that you would have to play with, and does get it done here over Extravagant Kid and Just Might. But Leinster, Luis Saez, Rusty Arnold getting it done here with that nice run to come under the wire, as I say. Chart margin of half a length, and Leinster yesterday, a flat 100, straight 100 buyer figure. So a good number there in the Woodford at Keeneland. Next up on the card at Keeneland, it was the TCA for the ladies. And In the Midst of Biz gets it done at 13-1. A horse that escaped me, certainly. Sneaking Out was the one that took the money from the betting public. Number six is In the Midst of Biz. Sneaking Out's the number one. Palace Avenger, the number five horse in here. But In the Midst of Biz, as I say, at $28.20, makes it look very easy in the TCA, and had to upset some pick tickets for people. 95 buyer from In the Midst of Biz. Martine Garcia on board there. In the First Lady, it was Uni getting it done over Beau Recall. Newspaper of Record winds up third. I like Newspaper of Record. I wasn't quite sure what to do with Uni. You can see Newspaper of Record there, the number four horse taking the lead, and I thought was going to hold off Uni. I thought was going to have, and then you see here, now Uni's going to go on by. But not only does Uni go on by, the number one Beau Recall gets up to just edge at the wire, Newspaper of Record. But a nice run by Uni to kind of get back to form this year after what has been a little bit of a disappointing early part of the season. A 99 buyer for Uni in the First Lady. And in the Breeders' Futurity, we had talked to Kenny McPeak about King Fury. He had that one in there. King Fury, a little bit disappointing. Took some action at 6-1, but winds up eighth in the field of nine. But Essential Quality. Brian Addo yesterday in the Handicapper Report really liked this horse. I had Jeremy Plonk on. Jeremy said this was going to be a single on his pick bets. Coming off of the maiden debut victory at Churchill, they both thought very impressive, visually impressive, and he was impressive yesterday. Essential Quality. Keep that one in your mind, because that was a nice-looking performance for a two-year-old from Brad Cox. Keep Me in Mind ran second. Superstock ran third. I like Calibrate off the maiden debut victory up at Saratoga. That one's sixth in the field of nine at sixth in the field of nine, a dead heat sixth in the field of nine at 2-1 as the second choice. A little bit disappointing for the Asmussen runner, Calibrate, off the nice try up at Saratoga, but no disappointment for Essential Quality. Again, keep that one in mind. That's a good-looking two-year-old. Let me see. Essential Quality, 88. This time of year for a two-year-old, 88's a nice little number. So a good performance in the Breeders' Futurity. And finally, a very nice number for Ivar in the Shadwell Turf Mile. I did not know quite what to do with Ivar. I liked the horse. I went back and forth about putting it in the mix. Casa Creed, the number one horse for Lee Einsiedler and his Pink Silks, has the lead. I thought, you know, just before this, he was going to maybe have the heart to hold on. He gets a little bit swallowed up. But Ivar, look at that late run from that one, like a freight train. Ivar over Raging Bull, over Without Parole. Analyze it, the favorite, a little bit disappointing, eighth in the field of nine. But Ivar, no disappointment. Paolo Lobo, Joe Talamo, they were commenting on the simulcast signal to Keeneland that the connections were shouting and hooping down the stretch. And very enthusiastic, and why not? You get a grade one, the Shadwell Turf Mile, you put that on the resume, that's a pretty nice victory. And so Ivar gets it done, and again, a solid buyer figure for Ivar. It was a 104 for Ivar yesterday. So again, really nice stakes action. Belmont, Keeneland, certainly Pimlico with the Preakness, and some fun storylines. As you heard Frank say, some locals got into the winner's circle on the big day. That was always fun. Robbie Alvarado getting the kind of the late call from Kenny McPeak to fill in when he had a commitment that he thought was going to play out, didn't play out. And so Robbie Alvarado gets the win there. Kenny McPeak gets it done with the filly over the boys. In, as I said yesterday, her ninth track in nine starts this year, which included trips across the country. I mean, you just don't see that kind of travel. Going to the Breeders' Cup will be her first opportunity to repeat a track this year because, of course, she ran second in the Bluegrass at Keeneland and the Breeders' Cup back at Keeneland. So she'll get a chance to repeat a track moving on to the Breeders' Cup, and it'll be fun to see what she does there and what some of the other horses do, because there are some Eclipse Awards to be played out given what we've seen in the Triple Crown races and whatnot. But it was a fun day. As I say, Pimlico, great set of stakes races, and the entire card, stakes at Pimlico, and then really important and nice stakes races as well at Belmont and Keeneland. All right. I've gone past my time, but it was a big show, and we tossed in a couple of races from France as well. We will continue to show you the races from Longchamp on Arc Day, and then a little bit later on this afternoon, I will return for OTB Live on a Sunday afternoon. We'll be looking at some Monmouth. This is, they're calling it, typically this time of year, it would be Meadowlands. It would be Monmouth at the Meadowlands. Now it's Meadowlands at Monmouth because they're not going to make the shift this year to the Meadowlands, but they still have this little late season card. So we'll have a little Monmouth in the mix, a little Keeneland, a little Belmont, and should be fun this afternoon. Don't forget, speaking of fun this afternoon, if you want to watch the races and kind of have a little company and maybe grab a little lunch, you can come here to the Clubhouse Racebook. Bonus, you get to watch all the football action as well, as you do every Sunday during the NFL football season. It's an NFL Sunday here at the Clubhouse Racebook. You can also put your name on one of the squares and maybe win a prize. So it'll be fun down here at the Clubhouse Racebook. Chris's Mid-City Tavern. We visited that the other day and visited with Chris, and that's our new easy bet. As I said when I talked to her with our interview, really a hop, skip, and a jump from anywhere in the Capital District, because it is literally 2 minutes off of 787 on Broadway in Menands. So swing on by and make that a spot to watch some races and enjoy, grab a bite to eat and have some fun. Chris's Mid-City Tavern, Broadway in Menands, our newest easy bet location. I should also hit you with a tout of Gulfstream Park West, because they're sponsoring some of our programming during their fall meet. And you can see the tagline there, thrills at every turn, Gulfstream Park West. Again, we appreciate their sponsorship of some of the programming here on the network while that Gulfstream Park West meet is underway. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. As I say, I'll be back an hour and a half or so to kick off OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. Looking forward to it. Hopefully you are too, and we will see you then. Thanks for tuning in this morning.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.